Hey guys, welcome to the Green Mountain Tradcast. This is Schaefer, and this is episode 19 with AJ Doobie. AJ had one hell of a year last year after having several years of struggling, as you would ask him. And basically, me and him had been trying to do this podcast for, I don't know, two or three months at this point, probably. So it was really cool finally being able to get him on. We started way off topic, so I kind of cut that out so you guys could just get right into the hunting stories. I hope you enjoy that, and this podcast starts right into his elk hunting adventure last year, so I think you'll enjoy this podcast. I just want to continue to thank my partner, Toughhead, so make sure you guys go check those out, and I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening.
Another thing, too, like, I didn't, like, growing up in Montana, like, I didn't grow up elk hunting. That's just, like, a new venture. Like, I'd go elk. My dad would go elk hunting with his buddies, but he never really would. He knew how hard it was, and he also knew that I was kind of the little fat kid, and then he knew I wouldn't be able to keep up in the mountains. So he kind of was doing me a favor, and he was sheltering me from just how bad elk hunting can suck, and it really does. It's a lot of fun. It's one of those things that it's fun looking back, like, after September and like leading up to September, but during September it sucks.
Yep.
Just because it's so physically demanding.
Somebody once told me that meat eater Steve Ranella said something like that's long-term fun, where it sucks
exactly
in the moment, but when you look back it was awesome.
Something exactly, it's one of those
lines.
Things.
Yep.
Or it's like, well, that was a nice thing too, is like my partner Josh, if you have a buddy to endure the suck with, it makes it fun in the moment. You're both miserable, but you're both having fun. You know, you're not really having fun, but it makes it more enjoyable knowing that there's another idiot as dumb as you are to be doing, going through the struggle you put yourself in, you know.
But, yep. I would assume heckling is a natural byproduct of that towards the other person.
Oh, especially when your partner's got a man bun and he's really kind of pretty. I give Josh such a hard time about it, but I'll tell you what, for a guy with a man bun, he's pretty hardcore dude. He's super into fitness, and he's just got to know, he kind of has a no quit attitude, and he just super after, you know, and, which is good to have. And we get along really well. And it was kind of funny, like the way we met is, we were just friends on Instagram, and he lives just up in northwest Montana. And I told him, like, 2 years ago now, I was like, hey, why don't you come down and hunt? And I wasn't sure how serious he was. Well, then I take off on the hunt, and he's like, I might meet you up, like, this one weekend. I'm like, all right. Like, sure, if he comes, he comes. If he doesn't, he doesn't. You know, I usually was just hunting solo because trying to, like, coordinate schedules and stuff like that just doesn't quite work out. And there's not a lot of people. Like my high school friends, they're not really into the backpack thing. They've got to figure it out that they can, how to, you know, drive down the Forest Service road, walk a mile off the road and call an elk in and shoot it right off the road and then pack it the half mile back to the truck.
Perfect.
And they're like, you're crazy for trying to. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, maybe one day I'll get to that stage, but until then, I'm going to do it the hard way.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, Ian is up, we're trying to talk to him with using my inReach text and messages, trying to tell him how to get to camp. Well, he ends up finding my spike camp and like noon on a Friday. And that was the first time we ever met the guy. And so we sit there and we're just BS each other, like two perfect like strangers. Like we're just, you know, Instagram friends, you know, and then we're meeting face to face for the first time. And we talk for a few minutes and or not a few minutes, a couple hours, you know, a few hours, and then we get our gear on and we go down to this little spot and Josh ends up shooting his first archery bull, and it was best friends ever since. So
it's freaking awesome.
That was pretty neat. Yeah. He shoots a compound, but we all can't be perfect. But
that's true.
After seeing me last year, he's thinking about switching just because he was fighting his compound in camp last year with like tuning and stuff like that.
Yep.
And that was kind of my big switch. The reason why I went to traditional is just because there's just
not
like
a lot
I'm not
you can screw
tune
up.
Savvy. Exactly, that's just it. Like, my problem is like I love changing things and tinkering. Well, you start tinkering with a compound, then you gotta like start all over from scratch, you know.
Yeah.
So there's not much you can really do with a longbow or recurve. You know, you can change your arrows, but once you have that set, you know, there's not much to really do. You know, once your arrows are tuned.
Yep.
But with a compound, you change one thing, then you got to paper tune it, and then you got to sight it in. And now, like listening to like Snyder and some of those other compound gurus, like other kind of tuning and stuff like that, they're talking about doing. I'm like, holy, that's just it just overwhelming. I've been out of it for a while. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm like, what did they like? I don't know. I just want to go out and shoot.
Exactly.
Even if
I've never shot a compound. I've never owned one. I've probably shot like 5 arrows out of one over the course of.
Oh, you got lucky. Right.
I don't know if you saw that post of where I posted a video of myself shooting one that my friends got me.
No, I didn't.
So my friends convinced me to shoot one, and it's hilarious. When I pull it up, I go full cant just out of habit.
Oh, yeah.
And you right. see myself straighten the bow out, and then you just kind of see it, like, teetering back and forth because of all the weight. I'm like, oh, look at that.
Right.
It was one of those things I didn't even notice I did, but when you watch the video, you can totally tell it's a foreign thing to me. But
oh, yeah. That's funny. I'll have to go look at that.
What was that?
I gave up social media for Lent, and so like I will get on like Sundays, but the rest of the week I'm off until Easter time, and I'll probably get back on. I just I don't know. It's kind of funny. The first few weeks have been like looking at my phone, and there's like nothing, just like aimlessly scroll through, and then I realize like how much time I spend just looking at my screen, like not even like taking anything in. Yeah, so it's like. So, like, now it's, like, I got to the point where, like, somebody see a text. I'm like, I don't even need to, like, text that person back, which is bad. So I found myself doing that to you a couple times.
Oh, likewise. One of the best things I've done is I bought a watch.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't need to look at my phone for the time anymore.
Because
quick, innocent, like, look at the phone for, you know, the time all suddenly turns into...
2 hours later.
Yeah. And it's one of my best things I'm happy I did was buy a watch. Freaking don't need the phone for the time anymore. But totally agree with that. Now
exactly.
Still on, especially now during the quarantine, it's ridiculous. But freaking.
Right. Yeah, I miss the memes. That's the.
Oh, the meme game is
that's
strong.
That's the best
right
part.
Now.
I bet.
But.
That and making hunting great again, watching his stuff. I guess pretty funny.
I know I don't even know where I was going with that, so go ahead.
Oh yeah, the stuff he comes up with is pretty funny. But what you should do is you could just come out here, you know, buy like I don't know, come out and buy an over the counter bear tag. Not even drop the money on the elk and just come out and hang out in camp or come take along and hunt with us. Or if you want to pony up the cash, at least apply or buy your point for Montana for elk. And then because did you see that I think I told you what I picked up on my way back through Kafaru. I ended up getting an 8-man teepee.
I did see that. That was pretty awesome. I didn't know which trip to Kafaru you were going to talk about because there's been a few and you've picked up a few things over the trips.
I don't want to like overplay how much of a fanboy I am, but...
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. We're all a little bit of a Snyder, right?
Oh, yeah. Hardcore, yeah. So we ended up getting... That was on my way home. I ended up swinging into Kafaru and he ended up having a... what is it? A seconds, 8-man teepee. Cause last year we had the sawtooth.
Yep.
And year before last, I had the sawtooth, past 2 seasons. And that shelter it's absolutely fantastic. You can get that little stove in there and then you get your liner so you don't get any condensation.
Yep.
And, then, But the problem, and you can fit two guys in there. The problem Josh and I had with it last year is we got, it started raining. So, like, I guess I'll just probably break into the trip a little bit from last year.
We ended up getting in there. The elk hunt too.
Yeah. So last year we ended up putting in our, we ended up going in a day early. And so it's kind of, so I look forward to it because after like dieting hard and working out and everything, the town close by where we hunt, it's a little ranch town and it has, I think, 3 or 4 bars, all within like just on a block of each other. It's just like the main drag through town. They're all right next door to each other. And yep. So the one bar though, it has, just like the best food and like burgers ever. So we meet there Thursday night and have a couple beers and burgers and we make the drive up top of the mountain and we sleep in the truck. And then that Friday morning we go hiking into camp, your camp spot. And we're getting our packs on and it starts to rain and we're like thundering, you know, and it's like, oh man, just like little sprinkles. And then ended up raining just a little bit and we end up getting to camp and we're all jacked up because on the way in there there's elk bugling and I think we're at 5 or 6 bugles.
Perfect.
And the way this Montana opens up its season is it does the first Saturday of September. Well, that could be a whole week into September, so the ruck had already been happening for like the past 2 weeks or so.
All right,
and yeah. So it kind of was a yeah, so we're kind of late into it, getting into it. And we were kind of complaining about that. I mean, which is bad because, I mean, we got an over-the-counter tag, cost us $20. You know, we got all this land to hunt and everything's, we got all this great gear and all, you know, we got 2 weeks to go hunting and everything, but we're complaining because the season's a week late. You know, I guess that's like first world hunting problems, but we get to camp and end up checking one of the trail cameras and there is a picture of this bull on a wall that was there like a week ago and he was every bit of like 320, just a huge bull, but all the big mature elk, I guess, the super big bulls, I guess they head down onto the private land that's right by there and they'll spend the September down on the flat private. And but then like everything that's left, there's still big mature or decent bulls up top. And but just like the big, you know, huge bulls, I guess, head down. But
do you know if there's a reason?
So yeah, no.
This kind of seems a little strange.
I'm not sure if maybe because they start a season. I think there's a lot of cows down on the private.
All right.
During in the summer months because they actually have like an early rifle hunt. Like except August 15th for like 2 weeks down on the private because apparently Montana thinks we have too many elk, even though we have a huge wolf problem and chronic wasting disease.
Excellent.
But, yeah, exactly. I don't understand that logic. Yeah. It's funny. Like going a little tangent, they say we have too many elk, right? But they'll give out extra tags to shoot the elk, but you can only shoot them on the private side of the fence. You can't use that tag on the public land side of the fence. So it's like, what's it matter? Like what side of the fence it's on is still part of that elk herd, but
I would have anyways, to so, assume taxes, yeah. But that's going down a different rabbit hole.
Yeah. So anyways, here we are. And, it starts raining like Friday night, just hard. That shelter was awesome. And, the problem we had though with it was it's for two guys was it's just when you're trying to get all your firewood and stuff and keep your firewood dry and then you got all your gear and everything, it just got a little too cramped. So this next year, this 8-man it'll be awesome. And even if it's just us two, I threw a couple other invites out, like Tyler DePung might come up or Brandon Keaton come up.
That'd be cool.
If they apply, I mean, if they draw, which is the one little kicker. So anyways, I guess, we get up way too early Saturday morning, opening morning, cause I'm super excited. We have this grandmaster plan to to make this big loop down where Josh shot his bull the year before. And we end up hiking in the dark and the rain, and it's just absolutely miserable. Just like
full
like Vietnam. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we get to hiking, and we end up having to stop because we got to the point where we'd have to jump off the main Forest Service trail to cut cross country or whatever. And we didn't want to go busting through that timber in the dark. So we sit there and for a little bit, and like right at shooting light where we get our packs back on and we start taking down the trail. And I think I was in front, and we're walking for about literally maybe 2 minutes. I think I'm not even sure how far we covered. And I look up, and sure enough, there's an elk standing perfectly broadside. I'm like, what in the heck? I peek, and Josh is right on my heels, and he kind of sees what's happening. I didn't even talk to him. He figured it out, once he saw me get an arrow ready. And I looked to see if it had antlers, and I was like, well, shoot, at this point, I'm going to shoot a cow. Like, I don't even care if it's a, a cow opening morning,
Yep.
And I was like, oh, it's got antlers. And I was like, oh, it's just a dink bull, because I could only see, I thought the tops of he's missing his thirds, or he's missing one set of tines. I think his thirds. But I thought the uppermost tines I saw, it looked like it was just a raghorn. I didn't see the swords coming off the back.
Yep.
I was like, yeah, whatever. I'm just going to shoot it. And I was like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a poke. But I always shoot my bow. I've got 60 yards I can shoot down the length of my driveway. Actually, 50 yards down the length of my driveway. And if I stand on the edge of the neighbor's lawn and shoot across the street, our little subdivision, no traffic, I can get 60 yards. So, I shoot 40 yards is just where I usually start. I might start, 25 to warm up, and then I'm kind of like Snyder. I'll drop back, and I'm not afraid to...
Yeah. Was it
especially
you that
too,
I saw shoot his garage?
Oh, yeah, that's me all the time.
All right, I thought so, but...
Yeah, because, sometimes the arrow won't clear the top of my garage, and so I'll end up sticking it in there, because it arcs from, 60 yards. It'll arc way too much, and then it won't quite clear if I don't do my part.
Yeah, the arc can be a bit of a SOB sometimes.
Yeah, but it was... I was like, I felt really comfortable with it. And I was like, I'm going to kill this thing. And I ended up letting it go. And it was just light enough that, it was just like that. It was like an eerie, gray, kind of gray light. And I could clearly see him. I could see his shoulder. I could see everything, And but I think what happened is he just couldn't quite... He could see our movement, but with our camouflage on and just the darkness, he couldn't figure out what we were. So he was standing there perfectly still trying to figure out what we were. And I ended up coming back and just focused on hitting anchor and then let it fly. I'm kind of semi-chat. I used lighted knocks just because I wanted to know where that hit goes. And that was the coolest thing, watching that green knock cut through the darkness. It was just awesome. And that thing hit, and it was a little bit back. And I was kind of kicking myself. I was like, oh, no. And but the cool thing was having that lighted knock, is Josh was standing there right next to me, and he was able to see the hit. And so he was able to reassure me. And I shoot, and then the woods explode. I only saw him, but he had there's other elk in this little kind of an opening area where it just, you walk down the main trail, kind of opens up in the sparse timber.
Yep.
And he goes off, and we watch where he goes, and Josh lets out this scream, like a little, like my daughter would probably make. It was absolutely hilarious. He's like, she's like,
it's that
you
man bun.
Did it. He's like, yeah, he just like, yeah, his feminine side came out, and he was like, And I just like dropped my knees. I was like, holy smokes. And I got good penetration and saw where he went. And they're a little bit worried because I know a lot of guys, they won't hunt in the rain, but it's like, with elk especially, it's like he put so much work into to getting ready for it, and the chances to come by are so slim anyways that you better just put your rain jacket on and just go out there, because you take the chance. And so we end up going down and we marked. I was like, holy cow, that was a poke. Josh ends up running down to where the bull was standing, and they had range finding Josh, and he was like right on 40 yards. And I was like, that's pretty neat, being able to, all the practice that I'd shoot that much for so long. And obviously, like, getting closer, I'm all for getting close. And if you're not comfortable, obviously don't shoot. And because I would never take the shot if I didn't feel comfortable with it, you know.
I was about to say, would you say you have a max distance, or is it just like a feel thing?
Kind of a feel thing. 40 yards is about my max. And then, like, shooting an elk, you're basically shooting like a medium-sized pizza box to try to get in the vitals.
Yep.
And so it's such a huge target. And then elk, too, they don't jump the string. And so it's like, I don't know, I'm not sure how to, like,
it's an analogy to use,
but it is, yeah, like trying to shoot a whitetail, there's no way that deer's going to be in the next county by the time the arrow gets there. But elk and mule deer, you know, they're just doing it, they don't move, they'll just take the hit. And so we end up going down, and we end up kind of looking around, trying to find first blood and put down some markers. At this point, this is Josh's first, like, kind of extended backcountry hunt. He did that kind of like an overnight trip, you know, but he never got to, like, embrace the suck of how bad the weather can be, you know?
Yep.
But luckily he's still wanting to do it again next year. So that's good. But he is soaked to the bone. He didn't bring rain pants. He just had a rain jacket. And, so we're just like, you know, it was a little far back. Josh was like, oh, it's good. He's like, well, let's run back to camp, you know, and we'll give this bull some time. Like, I didn't want to push it because previous year I ended up losing a bull, and I wanted to make sure we did this right, you know, and I didn't want to bump him or anything. I was, especially in the rain, I guess it was kind of like one of those, chase him down because of the lack of a blood trail because of the rain, or do we let him die, you know? And we just erred on the side of caution, and as far as giving him time. So we go back, and as we're walking back, kind of replaying the shot. And the nice thing is we were walking downhill, so the bull was below us. And so it kind of made the shot a little easier because of the downhill angle. And so when the broadhead, the arrow hit, it cut downward. And so I think it did even more damage because it had more tissue to cut through.
Yep. You were using a day six, right, if I remember?
You know, I shot day sixes a little bit last spring, and then I ended up going to Black Eagle Instincts. And then I ended up dropping the coin on Iron Wills.
Oh, that's what it was. That's what I meant to say. I knew it was one of those.
Yep, yeah.
One of those heads.
Yeah, Gucci broadheads is what I call them.
Yeah, they are a little out of my price range.
You know, I shot a two deer with them, and I ended up losing a couple. And I'll tell you what, that's painful.
That's gotta hurt.
Yeah, leaving them things lay in the field, just like, oh, there's $50 gone. And so we end up getting dried out. And go back, made a fire, and had some snacks, and came back like a few hours later. And we're like, that bull's just got to be dead. There's no way that thing is still alive. And we're fortunate that we found some blood, but then it just went dead. So we're just like, we're just going to have to grid search it. And we were fortunate because he went on the slope. He ran diagonally across the slope, or no, straight across the slope. Parallel, that's the word. Dumb redneck trying to figure out. had the English language.
Mathematical terms.
Yeah. So we ended up running down, and we're like, well, shoot, he probably went down to the drainage bottom to go to water, you know, because yep. Milk's probably going to go down, you know, downhill, logic would say. So we make a pass, and we're going down. We ended up going like a thousand yards. We went on this big, long walk just to make sure we weren't going to walk by anything. And I was starting to feel sick by the time we pivoted to come back up to work up higher up the hill because we hadn't found him.
Yep.
And we end up, and we're getting discouraged. And then we go to, on the way back, and we get almost back to the trail about a few hundred yards from the impact area or whatever. I look up, and sure enough, I see an elk laying there. And I'm like, what in the heck? And so I get an arrow ready and start walking up. And then I realized what I was looking at, you know, and I just start freaking out. And Josh would have walked right over him because I was looking up toward Josh would be walking, but I had got out ahead of him a little ways. It's hard, like in the timber, to try and do that perfect grid pattern, you know?
Yeah.
And I lose my stuff. I freak out. And that was pretty fun. And then we spent the next few hours trying to break this thing down and get it loaded up. And another shout out to Snyder for all the info he puts out there on how to do meat care. We ended up putting the meat in game bags. We boned everything out. And then there's so much water up there, which is awesome. And they're all and these nice cool drainages. Plus the two, it was only like 50 some degrees because of the rain. And the rain, it was still raining, and finally it stopped. And but there was no bugs or anything like that. So we ended up caching most of the meat right below the kill site, and then we each loaded up a bag of meat. Josh is a beast. He tried taking out like two full game bags, so he was well over every bit of 150 pounds or something like that.
Wow.
And I was like, what are you doing? He makes it down the trail a little ways. He's like, I can't take the rest of this. We ended up cashing it down the trail a little bit further, which kind of hosed us. We had to go back for it. But we were smart. We were able to put a truck up at the top of the mountain, and then one, we left his truck down below. So we had like 3.5 miles down, and we ended up taking the first load out that way. And we ended up got close to the road, and then I was able to send a text, and the lady is like, hey, get us a hotel room in town. And she ended up booking us a room, and we were a little late on getting burgers, though. We ended up having, can't remember what we had. I think we had like pizza or something at the bar, but it tasted great. And like frozen pizza.
Awesome. Perfect.
But but no, it was, and we're coming back into town, and there's the Great Falls, and we ended up heading back out like the next Monday. Then we grinded out trying to get Josh a bull, and we ended up it was just quiet. It's so thick in there, and there's so much water that there's literally like an elk wallow like every, you know, few hundred yards there's a wallow. So yep.
Hard to pinpoint.
You can't sit on a wallow because they're all tore up, and they were just super quiet. And then Josh, he was doing DJing on the side, so he had to go DJ for a wedding. Well, he makes so much money off of DJing for weddings on the side of being a construction contractor.
Yeah,
it basically paid for his entire trip. So he ran all the way back up to Kalispell to do that, and I ended up coming home to finish cutting up the rest of my elk, and then I ended up going back, and it was like a week later, and ended up sitting on my elk carcass, and I shot my bear, and that was pretty cool, because like Montana, we can't bait for bears, so the only thing you can do is spot and stalk, and there's no way to spot and stalk in the timber so thick unless you just, things have to be just absolutely perfect, and so I ended up went back in there a day early, and it was like a Friday afternoon, And I was like half late. I get there like later in the afternoon. It was funny because I walked back in there and like right below camp, there's a 5-point bull just laying out in the open. Just eating. He had no idea. Josh could have easily dropped the compound bomb on him, you know. Like, yet again, like I'm not advocating for long range shooting or anything, but it could have been done, you know, or called him in. But I ended up telling Josh, like, I found your bull. He's right here. He's right below camp, right next to the creek. We can keep him cool in. Yeah. But, I get up that Saturday morning, head down to my elk carcass, and ended up busting a sow and a cub off of there. And I ended up sitting there for quite a while. I think it was like 4 o'clock. My bear finally showed up, and I looked at him like, ah, he's pretty small. He's young. And I was like, oh, he's going to pass. And then it's like, I don't know what it was, but I just started getting like super excited. And I was just sitting underneath a tree, like 20 yards from my elk carcass. And we got grizzlies moving in. So I had the 10 mil sitting next to me. And I couldn't use it on black bears because I think gun season started the next day or something like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quite gun season yet. But just in case or things got western or whatever. And he would eat in the carcass and he took a nap. And then I was like, I'll try a shot, you know. And I'm like, my heart is just like absolutely racing. Like, I was going crazy. You know, like that adrenaline from like shooting your first deer kind of adrenaline, just absolutely like, I wasn't even this excited over my elk. And I ended up, I just airballed the shot. And he like comes at me, he like comes up like 15 yards. And you're trying to figure out what's going on. But just being a younger bear and then being full camel and I guess their eyesight, whatever the wind is, right? He just couldn't figure it out. So he just went back to being a young bear. And finally, I'm just like, all right, if he lets me get up to my knees, so I sat back down. I was like, if he lets me back to my knees, then I'm going to try a shot. I get to my knees and he kind of spooks and then runs off and then runs back. And he goes broadside and I let him have it. And then things kind of got western. He takes the arrow, just pass, zips right through him, and then he takes up a tree. And I'm like, I don't know what it was, but I was like, ah, I'm going to run up there and shoot him out of the tree. So I shoot, and I end up missing the one shot, and then I hit him again, and I could put another couple in. I'm of the opinion, you know, if they're still breathing, they need more arrows.
Yeah.
And or bullets if you're gun hunting. And he ends up falling out of the tree and runs off and dies. And, you know, like, I was kind of beating myself up because I had a pretty big high standard of, like, what, like, an acceptable size for a bear was. But then I was like, you know what? Like, for the area I was in, just trying to even, like, shoot a bear, let alone is tough just because it's so thick that without baiting, there's no other real way. And then, too, like, bears are absolutely delicious. If you've had bear before, it's, I don't know, if like, you know, listeners, it's kind of like if a pig and a cow had a baby, it would be a black bear. It's just, yeah, I don't know, it's fantastic. And so I beat myself up pretty hard over, like, not shooting a more mature bear. But then I was like, you know what? Like, this is, a cool experience. I would have been a cool experience just sitting watching that bear for that long, you know, just because bears are cool animals. But, because he I think he got weaned off just that previous spring or summer.
Yep.
And, the nice thing, though, too, is, like, it was easier to pack out. And that was a bonus.
I mean, what are the odds you ever get to shoot a bear over your elk kill again, too? So,
exactly, yeah, yeah. That's why
it doesn't add sentimental value to it. I don't know what would.
Exactly, that's pretty awesome. And it was funny, the wardens, when I took it in, they're like, because you have to have your bear checked in Montana after you shoot it, and they'll get a tag or whatever on it and age it. And I just happened to come by the day they were all having a meeting. And so, like, every game warden in the state was at the regional headquarters office. And they were giving me such a hard time. And they're like, what'd you shoot it with? I was like, I shot my longbow. I was like, oh, okay. But it was just a fun experience. Like, I don't know. It's, I guess, too, like, it's kind of like, especially with traditional archery, I don't want to use, like, ever use, like, the fact that I'm using a longbow as a like an, as an excuse to just shoot whatever, you know. I don't think that's quite right, but there's other times too where it's like when you feel that it's right, and I'm not putting anybody down who wants to shoot, you know, whatever. I'm no trophy hunter myself, but I see, I think it's just, you know, if you feel like it's right to shoot, then shoot, you know, and then don't ever regret or try to have to shoot, feel like you have to shoot something to make yourself look cooler on social media or anything like that. But
I totally get that.
Yeah.
Being and, from the Northeast, seeing deer is a good day.
Right, exactly. That's kind of how the bears was there. That bear was. I was just like, you know what? I passed up a bigger bear last the previous season because I was packing in, and I just I was packing in to start my hunt, and I was like, I just don't want to. I don't want to turn this elk hunt that's just starting into a bear pack out fiasco or whatever. And so I ended up passing him, but. Yeah, I know, it was pretty cool, and I ended up telling Josh to bring some Idahoans, those all powdered potatoes up, and we ended up eating them, or part of the back strap, and Josh was kind of like, nah, I'm not too sure on it, I'm like, trust me, he's like, this is going to be awesome, so we ended up grilling some of that back strap on the fire and some tin foil, and like, have you had bear before?
I think I have had one bite-sized piece, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that has been a teaser for the rest of my life.
Buy a bear. I think a bear tag for non-resident isn't that expensive. You should come out and just do that, and if you buy an elk point, you know, depending on what your budget is, especially now because, like, airplane tickets are super cheap, I guess.
That would make a lot of sense at the moment.
Right. But, no, the fat on them is, you can just like put it on a stick and roast just a cube of the fat in the fire and just eat it. It's like, it's absolutely amazing. But, so.
Well, that's cool.
But yeah. So we end up grinding it out for the next few days with Josh, and we end up getting into some elk, but just never really, cause like, I don't have much experience like calling elk that are actually bugling. So we got on one bull, and I think I got too aggressive because he sounded aggressive. So I was like, I'm going to be aggressive back. And I blacked out, went full Corey Jacobson and just started screaming at him. Well, he didn't like that and ended up blowing him out in another bull. And it was pretty bad. And then we looked at the weather forecast too on the inreach, and it was calling for snow and stuff. And we're like, we're getting already to the end of the trip, and we've had a great trip, you know, and we're like, we better just, because there's nothing worse than a pack up camp in bad weather. You know, setting up in bad weather is one thing, but like trying to pack everything up, or like we're going to have one good afternoon here. Let's do a good morning hunt. And that morning hunt was actually pretty neat because usually like a full moon, the elk kind of lay low in the middle of the morning, but we ended up actually getting into a lot of elk, and we almost had another opportunity, but it was like 11 in the morning. We ran into actually a couple herds, and things got kind of crazy there, but just couldn't make it happen for Josh. And that's like the biggest regret. I really wanted to double down on elk with Josh, but that's next year, I guess. So
I was about to say, each year, I'm sure it'll, well, I'm not going to say it's going to get easier, but you'd have to assume you would know more each year, and there'll be,
that's it too. And that's kind of too, I think if we had a couple other guys, just trying to find the elk is tough when they're not talking. We had a few days where we just couldn't find them.
Yep.
And they weren't bugling. And then we were all gung-ho to go out and go night bugling, but it's hard to go out and go night bugling when you spend the whole day and out in the rain. The last thing you want to do is wander around in the dark, more rain, you know?
Yep.
But no, we ended up grinding out. There's that too. So
yeah,
we sure tried. And we put on a lot of miles, and we ended up doing hiking in some of the area there that I hadn't even gone through, which should have been done during the summertime. But you never know. I mean, there's signs of elk back in there. I mean, what we were doing is we were trying to find the elk that we lost, blown out the day the night before. I just didn't pan out, but got a nice nature hike, I guess.
Exactly. But, got some good calories.
So how'd your deer season go? Did you end up putting deer down? I can't remember.
From a Vermont standard, hunting with traditional gear the whole year, I would put it as a success for my personal self. Opening day, I completely botched a 6-yard shot, which is about the most frustrating thing ever.
But I've done that before.
So I started doing that, the Jason Samkowiak. I took his class on whitetails and whatnot. And
how was that? Dive into that a little bit.
That's awesome. I mean, it's funny because I did a podcast with him about it. And, well, it's just one of the many things that come up in it. But it's funny because Vermont is big forest, big woods. That's in a lot of topography. The thing is this year there was so much food. Like you were saying with the wallows, it was, you know, there was no real pinpointing. They could be wherever, whenever, because they didn't have to go very far for food this year. Because pretty much all the oaks had acorns. So it was really hard finding deer. And opening morning, this was the first year I never hung stands before the season. I set up a lone wolf.
Oh, just hanging and banging.
With portable. Yep. By far the best thing I've ever done. Mostly just because in Vermont, I'm not going to lie, there's significantly more days where I don't see deer than I see deer.
Right.
So one of the best parts about being mobile is each time I go into the woods, I'm going somewhere because of a game plan. So it gets you, it builds up your positive vibes, if you want to say, just because you're going there for a reason. It's not like, well, the wind's going this direction, I have a stand over there, may as well sit. That's been like 3 or 4 years. And then this year, it was well, the wind's going this way. I know the deer tend to like to do this, I think, so I'm going to sit here because of that. So it definitely kept my positive attitude was much higher this year every time I sat.
That's good.
And then opening morning, it was pretty funny. So I marked a whole bunch of trees when I scouted and whatnot, and I had them marked in my GPS just in case I got lost. I mean, we don't hunt a super big chunk of land, but obviously at nighttime, everything looks different. So.
Oh, yeah.
So it's funny. So I get there, and I remember when I marked this tree, I'm thinking, yep, this is right in the middle of their runway. You know, if they're coming down this, it's going to be right to me. So I get to that tree in the morning thinking it's going to be the best spot for opening morning. And I get to the tree. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the one. Go up it, do a little trimming because it's private property, so can trim branches and whatnot.
Right.
Shit you not, 2 hours later, maybe an hour and a half later, here comes just a line of does. I think it was two moms, the fawns from the previous year and the fawns from this year. So I think there may have been up to six. But it just, they progressively got smaller. It was kind of like you opening up those dolls.
Right, yep.
So they're coming right at me, and the front doe, which was by far the biggest, hits my scent trail. Now, keep in mind, if they had just, you know, gone down that, they would have crossed right at the foot of my tree, and I never would have gotten a shot, because
they're
coming right at me. So the best thing that actually happened was she hit my scent trail, because she bounded back a little ways, and she ended up being, like, quartering away at, like, 6 yards, and she just highlighted her vitals perfectly with, like, a framing of leaves. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, I was, you know, bow at the ready. Freaking saw that moment, and I shot. And I just saw my arrow disappear behind the leaves. And I'm well, that sucks. Because if I had hit her perfect, the arrow would have, you know, you would have been able to see it through the leaves.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, oh, crap, I missed. You got to be kidding me. I mean, I could have jumped on this sucker from where I was.
Right.
So I'm like ultra mad at myself. So at this point, they all run away, get my binoculars out looking for my arrow, and I see blood. I'm like, oh, okay, this is a little different. This went a little differently than I thought it did. So basically what ended up happening is I'm pretty sure I hit her right in the armpit. So it was just
clicked her.
Just kind of an in and out. And the only I tracked right. her for like 4.5 hours, and it was pretty obvious it was a flesh wound. But right. it took me until the last minute to find the arrow, and that was the nerve-wracking part, because I was like, well, if the arrow's in her, we might have a different story on our hands.
Exactly.
And what I think happened is the arrow went through her, and it hit the ground, so it didn't pass through, and she ended up, like, pole-vaulting a stump with the arrow, so it broke off, and it was sticking straight out of a stump, and eventually I just found it, and I'm like, man, that looks like a straight twig, and it was, you know, the first 20 inches of my arrow with a broadhead on the end. So,
oh, wow.
So
that's a tough break.
Yeah, and the worst part is it being Vermont is I was like, yep, that was the opportunity. That was the time. Because right. the odds of getting two chances, I'm not going to lie, are pretty slim. But, and then other than that, I ended up hunting Massachusetts this year. First out-of-state hunt for myself. And I think I was there for about 4 days. And you can't hunt Sunday, so I only got to hunt three of them. And I saw by far the biggest whitetail of my life. And the coolest part about it is it was during the like the little secondary rut, you know, the main chasing had already been happening. And I have never seen rutting activity in my life before, just because Vermont's stupid up until this year, and you couldn't hunt during the rut. There was literally a 2-week lull during the rut where you can't hunt with any weapon. So.
Oh, really? That's weird.
Yeah. So he was, I saw a doe run by me in the ravine, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I wonder if there's going to be a buck following her. 2 seconds later, big old buck following her. And this is one of those moments that really reassured the reason why I only hunt with a stick bow, because he stopped at probably 75 yards, perfectly broadside with a rifle, done deal.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Done deal. So now, this is like my fourth sit ever in a saddle, keep in mind, which is a new experience.
How'd you like it?
I like it.
Are we going down that road for a little bit?
I need to get used to it more. This year, I finally bought a... I really wanted the Kafaru Striker.
Okay, yep, I just got that, yeah.
Yeah, but I couldn't justify buying the frame and the pack. So, regardless...
It's not a cheap investment.
No, so I bought a QU 2300 Venture, because it was an internal frame pack, $200. So this year, instead of the saddle, I think I'm just going to attach the stand to my pack. Because I didn't have a good enough backpack that made it seem like... basically, when you put a stand on it, you just felt like you were being pulled backwards because the backpack sucked.
Right.
So instead of getting the saddle this upcoming year, I invested in a better pack. So it's not that I didn't like the saddle, but the perks I thought it was going to have, they weren't very... It wasn't for me. So
see, what my problem was is I ended up having some cash. And I was like, I'm either going to buy a lone wolf or a saddle. Like, I'm going to buy a saddle. But the problem is like, see, like, I put up most of my focus into elk. And then after that's done or was done, it's like, I'm all about deer. Like, I love whitetail. But I should have had my saddle or whatever before the season. So trying to find a saddle mid-season, especially now that they're so popular now, it's like the new cool thing to do. It was just hard to do. And I think, what was that one that just came out just last fall? I was going to do one of theirs, but then it's like the investment, I already had sticks, climbing sticks, but like the investment into a saddle was more expensive than buying the fancy lone wolf stand by the time you buy a platform and everything.
Yeah.
But I just ended up buying the bigger lone wolf stand.
The Alpha?
The Alpha. Yeah, that cured a lot, because I'm new to tree stands just as of like year before last, so that cured a lot of problems I had with hanging a stand.
I love my lone wolf, but so it was like probably the fourth sit I had. This Massachusetts hunt, it was kind of funny. I had literally my Great Northern Super Ghost. I had gotten that in the mail an hour before I left, and that was the only bow I
had. Oh, wow.
So, and then on top of that, this was like the first, I had just gotten my saddle in the mail. So my buddy that I went hunting with had also just gotten a saddle. So on, I think it was Sunday when we couldn't hunt, we both hopped in them and shot out of them a whole bunch. And we were like, screw it, we're going to hunt out of our saddles. It was a pretty funny
thing. Right.
It was just all new down there. But anyway, right. So the buck was at like 75 yards, and it was really cool because when I was picking that spot, I looked down in the ravine, and I'm like, I almost guarantee you there's scrapes down there. And as I'm watching it, he was freshening up a scrape from my stand. I'm like, knew it. It was just kind of a satisfying moment. But and then I had the grunt call already out, and it was on the tree, so I freaking started laying down some gnarly grunts, just as I'm pretty new to calling because it doesn't work that well here, and we can't really
hunt
during the rut. So I just started laying down what I thought was some appropriate grunts, and he was probably at like 150 yards, and I finally got him to turn around, and he beelined right towards me, basically. The issue is what I thought was a steep bank, and he was going to come up this nice little bench that would have put him broadside right in front of me. Apparently for a whitetail was not a steep bank. So he came right up the side and he was looking right at me.
Oh no.
And if I had hunted from a saddle more, I probably would have been smart enough to swing behind the tree.
Oh yeah.
I just kind of hunkered there behind my bow, and he kind of swayed his head a little bit trying to figure out what in the world was making all the ruckus. And I don't think I necessarily spooked him. But I think he just kind of was like, well, I already have a doe down there, so we're just going to hop back down there. Because he never really spooked off. But he ended up being like 20 yards from me and looking straight at me. So,
oh, man.
It was a super cool experience. And the reason I was saying that I know why I hunt with a recurve or, you know, the trad life is I don't regret any of it. You know, there wasn't a single moment
where
I was like, man, I wish I had a rifle or something along that line. It was like, man, that was awesome. For those who you know, never get a chance to experience that, I don't get it.
When I still rifle hunt a little bit, and it seems like the times that I'm bow hunting, wishing I had a rifle, and then rifle season comes and I have a rifle, the rifle hunt, for whatever reason, if it's the pressure, the weather, circumstances, is just as hard as hunting with a bow. And that's even on like private land, because like our rifle hunts in November, and probably just like back there, you know, being somewhere in the northern hemisphere, and in November it's usually it's cold. Like here it'll be cold and snowy, and sometimes it's sub-zero, the wind's blowing 20 miles an hour. That, or just, you know, the pressure, even if you're on the private land, you got deer pressured from the public side of the fence. And so, I don't know. It seems like it's definitely hunting with a traditional bow is challenging. It's a different kind of challenge, I guess, but both sides are challenging, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But
I know I tell a lot of people, I don't think of people that hunt with a gun any less. It's just,
no.
It's funny because I haven't done it a lot. I mean, I've shot one deer with a rifle, and I've probably brought a rifle into the woods maybe 6 times total at this point in my life.
Right. And
my dad, it was kind of funny. He bought me a 20 gauge with deer slugs for youth season. To this day, I think I have shot that gun maybe 5 times for skeet shooting, and not a single one of those deer slugs have been shot because he. The earliest memory as far as I can remember, I mean, I think he has only hunted with a bow since 96. And he didn't quite expect for me to follow his footpath as closely as I did. But I was always the weird kid in school when somebody asked me if I wanted to go duck hunting. Can I use my bow? Well, no. Well, I'm all good. It's just, I don't know. It's just always been that way for me. I can't explain why, other than it's thoroughly the how is more important for me.
I'll tell you what, between carrying a rifle and carrying a longbow, I'm going to take that bow just because I hate packing a rifle around. It's funny, I really want to get like a long range rifle and learn how to shoot long range, because there's a lot of times because I'm out on the open prairie in Montana, so there's a lot of times where just trying to get a shot, you know, inside like 400 yards, can be challenging. And then too, especially if you're trying to like take a more mature whitetail, cause a lot of like, we don't really tree stand hunt much here in Montana. It's usually, you get up like on a high bluff and then you can kind of watch the river bottoms or creek bottoms and the brush piles and the field edges and stuff. You kind of basically play sniper, you know, and, sometimes even that, just trying to find a decent deer. And usually like I go for rifle, it's like, I'm at, since I have a huge advantage, you know, it's just more of a shooting game at this point, not to like downplay it, but you're looking for a little larger deer.
Yeah.
Cause you have the ability to, but there's a rumor last year that there was like 180 inch whitetail hanging down on my in-law's place. And I thought I might've seen him or another big deer, but it's like, I could only get to like 500 yards. I'm like, you know, like got a lot of friends that could have made that shot, you know? And like, I want them to be able to teach me how to do that because I don't know, there's trying to like shoot a deer, nice big deer like that. I don't know. I think, especially like with, you know, range finders and you have all the data and all the computers that kind of teach you how to make shots like that and you practice that. I think it's totally doable, but like past that, I don't know. I don't want to get into that weeds, you know, like 1,000 yard hunting shots. Like my friends that can't shoot that far, they don't even say game out that far, you know, like my one buddy, I think he keeps it inside of 4 or 5, you know, but those are really experienced shooters. But
I know at a certain point, in my opinion, it becomes, you know, it's showing off how well you are at shooting, not so much
becomes the hunt.
Exactly.
Yep, exactly. Cool. Yep, I agree with that.
It's awesome being able to shoot out to 1,700 yards, but to say you're hunting,
right.
I don't know, not to go down that can of worms, I think is
exactly right.
Pretty loose, right. But
exactly. But no, I think it'd be pretty fun. But then, like looking at the carrying the weight of one of those rifles around that can make a shot like that, I'm like, I'm not sure it'd really definitely be a short walk from the truck to go sit on the bluff to for the day. Not really go hiking around with it, but
yeah.
I can definitely appreciate the art of trying to make shots or just to learn how to be better at that. But
exactly. But I suppose to get back on the trad life.
Right, exactly. Yeah, sorry. No, for like deer hunting, yeah, I just, because I grew up hunting on the ground. So just year before last, I was working along the highline with like North Central Montana. There was a piece of public ground that had pre-hung stands on it, and the farmer's like, yeah, my brother-in-law set them up, and he left them here. He's like, they're just first come first serve. So that was my first taste of trying to tree stand hunt, and I love hunting whitetails. It's just, it's awesome. And like trying to learn how to hunt up a tree stand, that's like a whole nother like skill set. You got to learn like how to get in the tree without killing yourself, how not to fall out of the tree, you know, just all these little things, how to position the tree and your climbing sticks and all that jazz and all your tether and then making your lineman's belt, all that jazz. That's been a lot of fun. So,
yeah, I know that was one of the weird things about the saddle was trying to figure out which way to face. Cause it seemed counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. It felt like I had to face the opposite way I wanted to shoot. So like,
right.
I felt like my back was always towards the direction I wanted to be looking, because I wanted to be able to shoot off to my left, being a righty.
Right.
So it was always like, well, this just seems weird.
You know? See, like, that's one thing I got. And then, like, the big killer was the platform and, like, the lack of platforms. And I was like, well, so basically, I'm going to have to take basically a tree stand with me, like, by a platform, right? And that's going to be like $150+. And then like, I was like, oh, I'll just get like the ring of steps or you screwing steps. And guys were like, oh, they're like, there's no way you're going to spend doing all day standing on those. Like, you better just get a platform. Like, well, that doesn't sound comfortable at all.
No.
Especially too, I like using those. I got that. You heard Snyder talk about that. The nods he's got where his hands freeze up super easy. I got that.
Yeah,
too,
I have that three fingers.
Yep. And so like my feet, and my hands, they get so cold so quick. Like right now, like just sitting in my living room, like my hands are cold. And so I ended up getting those over boots, and I don't know if there'd be a way to even like put all those things on and use a saddle with them or not, but it was sure nice with the tree stand, using those bad boys last year, electric socks and anything to stay warm. But I got really good friends, and they ended up telling me about a little piece of public ground that has absolute giant whitetails. I think my buddy's uncle said his uncle shot like 176 inch whitetail off this little piece. Yeah, and it's shotgun and bow only. And I went out there during bow season, and I learned a valuable lesson, something I should learn, or should have known, you know, for as much as I've shot a bow, that the knock fit can really mess up your arrow, like your knock to serving fit. Yep. Is really important.
Yep.
So like during archery season, I had a buck come out, and I ended up taking a shot, and ended up hitting him high, kind of like in the hip area. I was like, "Oh, femoral artery, you'll be dead," you know. And I am getting a hold. He jumped this other side of the fence. I'm like, "Oh, this is gonna be a pain." Like, this landowner's got no trespassing signs up and down his fence line, but I ended up going and getting permission. And the guy is, sorry, I got 3-year-old in the background.
No worries.
But the guy's actually a bow hunter himself, and he's like, "All right," he's like, hop in my rig, and we'll go down there and we'll look for him. And the guy was super awesome about it. Helped me, maybe looked around, but there's not a drop of blood or anything. But just ended up making a bad shot. You feel bad about it, but then you're like, "Hey, what caused that?" And I ended up coming to find out that I ended up building first, like my knocks were fitting like too sloppily on the string. What I thought was too sloppy, so I built it up. Well, then that made it too tight, and that caused all sorts of problems.
Yep.
And then I ended up, I was from shooting those lighted knocks. The lighted knocks had a narrower groove than my regular. Yep. And so the lighted knocks I hunt with were too tight, but my regular knocks were perfect.
That makes sense.
And so, yep. And so that ended up making, so it's, I think like, There's a line, like, a seems like a lot of people don't want to talk about like their bot shots or losing an animal. But I think you can really make a constructive conversation out of, okay, what can I do going forward, or what can I learn? There's got to be a lesson learned in each mistake and that.
Yep.
So
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I know when I first started my podcast, I've kind of gotten away from it a little bit, but I used to ask every person what their biggest success, failure, and one piece of information they would give to a new hunter. And basically what I was hoping for that failure was, most of the time it was a botched shot of some sort. For
exactly,
that exact reason, I was hoping to make an archive basically of people just explaining, you know, that it happens. And the only way to get over it is to keep going, because
it was like, you talk to a lot of guys, like talk to Snyder, and you know, that guy he's on fire. You know, he successfully harvests all these different animals, but then he also has his whoopses, you know. And I think if you haven't lost an animal, like I've lost an animal even with a rifle before, like you're not probably taking enough shots at game. And it's not saying like just start airballing shots or taking shots that are out of your ethical shot range or whatever. Just stuff happens and you're only human. But I think it's important to just get your head back in the game and just keep going after it and look to see what you can do to make yourself better, to not let that happen again. And
I was just going to say, I know I often say, you know, at least around here with how infrequent shots are.
Oh, yeah.
I typically say, you know, if you're waiting for perfect, the odds are is you're never going to get a shot.
That's exactly it.
You almost have to have, I don't want to say a percentage, but like there has to come a certain point where you're like, you know, if I feel this good about a shot, I'll take it. But waiting for perfect, the odds of it ever happening is going to be small, and odds are is perfect's never going to happen. So
that's what my elk was this past year is. Yep. Somebody said, oh, I'll just hunt harder and get closer. I'm like, well, you've been on zero elk hunts, so yeah, let me know how that goes for you. But I ended up going back out there and during rifle season picked up and like the rut started hitting and just the deer, like the quality of bucks. And I guess talking to my buddies, they're like, yeah, those aren't even the big ones. Like there's even bigger ones out there. I'm like, these deer are like 150, 160, 140, like all day and night, but it's like you're hunting just one little corner of the private. And the shotgun hunter showed up. Well, that pushed, like not even the does wanted to cross on the private side of the fence. And he'd sit up there and like beat my rat on the antlers trying to get stuff to come through, and a lot of like all day sits. And then conveniently I had a whoops at work that wasn't, I didn't break any rules or anything. I won't go into it too much. But anyways, the policy is like if any machine gets damaged, they got to send you home for a month unpaid. So I ended up having job insurance. So I was sitting at home. Well, I wasn't sitting at home. I was sitting in a tree getting paid my wage by my job insurance going deer hunting all through November. So that was pretty fun. You ever played around with decoys at all?
Deer not decoys? For anything other than turkeys. So
yeah, I ended up buying one, and the buck I ended up shooting, that I think sealed the deal. I wouldn't have been able to do it without it because the tree I was hunting out of, it was super exposed, just the cottonwoods, and there's no real cover. And he came in definitely like the more open side. Yep. But I had the decoy at like 15 yards or something like that, I think about 15. And sure enough, he comes in looking at the decoy, and he didn't see me draw my bow. He was so fixated on the decoy that it just totally distracted him. So I'm sold on that. It worked perfect, and it was kind of frustrating though, because like right before I shot that buck, I looked on the other side of the fence, and there was this deer. He had his tip-to-tip mane, his tip-to-tip, every bit of like over 2 feet wide, like definitely 24, 26 inches wide tip-to-tip spread, just this huge, giant whitetail buck, like the things your dreams are made out of, just absolutely giant. And I beat my rattling horns in the wind trying to get him to come in, and there's no use because he's got like three or four does or whatever. But I think I'd end up calling in my one buck. And you're talking about like making sure like the shot's right or if it feels right or whatever. I just, I had a buck that was like the same size, just that little like 3-year-old buck come in. And he was at 25 yards or 30 yards. And it's like, I can make a 30 yard shot all day, all day long, no problem. But it just didn't feel right, and it's getting the last of the season, so like size was an issue. I was gonna shoot him, I just wanted him to come like five more yards, and he wouldn't do it. And then that other deer I'm killing came up the same way, but he ended up taking another couple steps and ended up making a great shot and piled up. But,
perfect.
I definitely love in that tree stand. That's a lot of fun. That's addicting, the hang and bang and all that jazz. But the one thing I'm not so good at is I don't know how these guys like hunt in the public, whatever. They can sneak in super quiet and like super quietly hang their stands and in the dark, and then I go in there, I'm like crashing through like Kool-Aid man. And then I got that was the one problem with that decoy. It's the full 3D, I can't remember what brand I got. Is it carry light, the box buff, whatever it was. Yeah, and it's just you stuff all the parts and pieces inside the cavity, the body cavity, and that thing's banging and clanging as you're walking down the river bottom, and you're scaring every single deer out. But there were times where I would just like leave it under a tree and hope no one would mess with it. And then be in public, and then it got pretty well pressured. Like, I was seeing a gun hunter, like, every time I was out there. And so I was just getting up extra early to make sure that I'd get the tree I wanted or get back to my tree if I'd, because I figured the rut, and I was in about the best spot that I could be in, you know. So I was just, the last few days, I was like, I'm just going to keep grinding this tree out. And it got a point where I was like, I might have to change out the last couple of days. But luckily, I was able to get it done. But yeah, that, you can really geek out on tree stands. That's,
I know,
in like a different way. So, like,
to quiet them down, I would strongly suggest watching Jason Samkowiak videos. He's got some really cool things he does. Like, he cuts kayak grips in half, and he slides them over the buckles.
Oh, right. Yep, yep. I ended up doing... what did he... I ended up... I got Amsteel. The Amsteel for my climbing sticks.
Yep.
And then I ended up getting... I had the Helium, the Hawk sticks. But the problem with the Hawk sticks I had was the cottonwood trees, they have such a thick bark on them that they weren't locking into the tree, or it'd kick out really bad. So I ended up set of heck with it, and I just ordered a set of Lone Wolf sticks.
Those things are impressive.
That not having the dual steps is a pain, because you have to really make sure you you get your pattern right
going up the tree. The tree.
Yeah, and I'm not good at that. I'm so impatient, and, you know. With my other stand, I had one was like 20-pound stands or whatever. It was gifted to me, and it was great. But trying to like hang and bang with it was just a pain, because I could not get that thing in the tree without at least a half dozen F bombs and an hour in concession on the following Sunday. You know, it was pretty bad. Now I got it down to Lone Wolf. I might slip up once or twice and say a bad word, but
I know one of the funniest things happened to me last year. I was hunting with my buddy Ethan, and we were doing a double sit.
Mm-hmm.
And what we ended up doing is we both had the same Lone Wolf setup. So he set up his stand using his sticks, and then, well, he used one of my sticks to get a little higher. And then I flipped the steps as I went up, so I would end up on the other side.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So I had to get down first due to the direction of the steps, right? So I get down, and I'm, you know, I'm using my linesman's belt, so I'm kind of hanging off the tree. You know, it's getting it's pretty dark at this point. And I look up at him because our tree stand buckles are exactly the same. And I look at him like, I'll make sure I hit the right buckle. Because obviously if I didn't, he would have been going for a tumble. But it was we were trying to be super quiet, and the moment I said that, we both just started bursting out in laughter.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious, and it was a very loud getting down from that point. But that actually worked pretty well, just flopping the steps that we end up on the other side. But
Those sticks are amazing. Kind of just want to go, like, got me all excited about whitetail again. I might have to get that Amsteel out and go set up a stand and shoot out of my stand in the front yard and play around with it. Have you switched to using a Ropeman 1 on your lineman's belt?
I have, yep. So I have a...
Oh, man.
I switched to the Ropeman.
That's a game changer, isn't it?
Yes. It took a moment to get used to, and I also took off that cable. You know, the little cable that comes on it?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I took that off because I found it caused more troubles than benefits. So I took that off, and then once I got used to it, it was really sweet. And then another thing I did is I switched to the rope mod on the sticks instead of using the buckles. I have yet to climb a tree with it, but I do think I'm going to like it better.
I had on my hawk sticks, I did the rope mod right out of the gate, and that was awesome. And then for whatever reason, I was like, well, I'm going to try the... Because I love tinkering, and, like, I'm a gear guy. And so I was like, I'm going to try the Amsteel. Like, see if these little shoelaces can keep this. Can actually keep the sticks on the tree. So I'm going to excited to try that out. And what I did with those is I found somebody, one of those, like, the Run and Gun Deer Hunter group.
Yep.
That would actually do the braid it for me or whatever, do the little loops. Because I don't have the patience for it, and I didn't really want to, you know, I didn't want to tackle that project. Like, I'll DIY some stuff, but like, if I can pay a little bit more money and save a little bit of time, it kind of, the cost effort ratio. So I had some guy, I think it was like $40 or something, maybe $40 or $50 he charged me, I think, for a set. So that'll be neat to see if how those work out this next year. But yeah, it's funny, like, being scared of heights, and then all of a sudden, like, I love getting into a tree stand. Actually, I don't know, I still hate tree stands. Like, I'd rather sit in a ground blind, but there's just such a big advantage to being in a tree that, you know, but
it's funny, heights don't bother me, it's the wind. I have no problem being in a stand until the wind starts blowing. And then it is like leaning up against the tree, almost bear hugging it, freaking, we will survive.
we get some horrible winds here in Montana, like 20 some miles an hour. And it gets to a point where I just, like, I'm not even going to bother going out if it gets, too bad, because the activity just goes in the tank. But no, it was, deer hunting was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that, and been able to basically do it and then not have a work schedule in November was absolutely amazing. And and then to pay for my gas money, I was donating plasma. I started doing that last year. That works out great. You know, you're helping people out, and you make like $70 a week. And so, like, if you're a hunter and you're looking for extra cash, and you don't want to, and you want to do it all legally, yeah, it works out great. It's, and you can do it twice a week, and you can do like $250, $300 some bucks a month just doing that. And so you add all that up, you know, that's your gas money for a hunting season. And so, but yeah, it works out. It was pretty fun. It's kind of neat. Like, so what kind of bows you shooting? You shooting a northern? Is that what you're saying?
Oh my god, I'm in a bow cahoots right now, because I love my Great Northern Super Ghost. I absolutely love that.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I never thought I was going to love it, because I knew I was going to like it, but I also have a Schaefer Silvertip. That is like the most sentimental.
You have to have one of those.
Yeah, and this bow, you know, my dad bought it in 99, had Dave Wright hand me down on the riser because he was planning on giving it to me. So the bow has like beyond sentimental value to it. And then past year I ordered new limbs for it, because the original ones were 66 pounds, and that was because at the time moose, the legal shooting weight for moose was 65. So I've got some shoulder neck issues that I'm actually think I'm finally getting through,
right?
So I ordered some new limbs for it, and those are 54 pounds, which is like right in my sweet spot.
Yep.
So I was like, well, it's going to be no competition. I'm going to shoot this sucker once I get the new limbs. I mean, I even like shooting it with the heavy limbs, too. Actually, truth be told, I think I like it better with the heavy limbs, but it's not necessary.
Same when you come out here for elk hunting.
Yeah. And
pretty perfect.
So I've just been shooting the Super Ghost so well. And like I was texting you, this quarantine's going to be the best thing ever for my shooting, because it's just gotten so much better in the last few days.
Is that like a hill style then?
The Super Ghost is like a 50 styles recurve.
Oh, okay, perfect, yeah.
Yeah, so
that
now
was
I can,
like, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I can shoot both bows about equal. So now it's really just a matter of which one I'm going to choose. And I have a feeling the silver tip will win, just because the...
It's the silver tip, yeah.
That and the sentimental value is just, it's so, I've wanted to shoot a deer with that thing so badly, because
you know,
the whole meaning behind it. I was hoping to hunt with it last year, but a few days before season, I like tweaked something in my shoulder at work.
And,
and that was going to be with my original limbs too. And when I had the new limbs made, I was like, just make them as close to the old ones, so, you know, it still looks the same. So the only thing that's different is they're 54 pounds, and they're a little more red because the Cocobolo dye, because they're zebra wood stained Cocobolo to match the riser.
Okay, right.
So, you know, over 20 years, the stain changed, so
right.
makes sense. But I love that bow, and it'll probably be the one I hunt with.
Right? That's awesome.
And then you're shooting shocker, right?
Yeah, I ended up, so like, do you want to like piece of advice is, cause I started out when changing the transition before social media. So there wasn't the big resources and like all the Boyers weren't so readily available to research. So I ended up going to my local guy and he's Craig Comfer. He's just absolutely amazing guy. And, but he's a like hardcore Howard Hill guy. And that's the bows he makes is Howard Hills or style longbows. And make some recurves. But, so I was trying to struggle around trying to shoot a hill style bow for like ever since last year. And finally I was just like, I cannot shoot this. I have good days, but my good days weren't as good as many as my,
bad days.
As my bad days. And so I ended up was working around Missouri last year. Yeah. And so I went down to Black Widow. And I'd already ordered my stalker. And so I go to Black Widow, meet all those guys, and I ended up leaving there with a 54-pound the PL longbow, a two-piece. Yep. And I shot their bows, and I had my bow with me, because if I hit the road, I always had my bow. And I'd been trying to shoot it, you know, and I had taken the Wind Rock, because I was just coming back from carpal tunnel surgery on both my wrists.
Yep.
I just could not shoot that bow. Like I couldn't hit the paper, like out of a paper target and like your Vegas spot. I couldn't even keep it on the paper 20 yards with my bow. And I was like, this is bad. So I go to Black Widow and I'm like, these bows, like they aim themselves. Like I'm not even trying. Like this, you mean to tell me this is, cause like actually what it was like watching Snyder shoot. I'm like, man, this guy's really good. Like why is he so good? And I was like, well, first off, he doesn't shoot a hill style bow. I mean, I guess I think the way it is with the hill style, there's a few people that can shoot them good, but like it's like an art form. It's definitely a lot more challenging, and if you don't have the skill,
yep,
then don't push it. So like looking back now, I wish I had sampled out a whole bunch of different bows, and I ended up getting rid of the Black Widow once the stalker came, because the stock, you know, it's like a recurve style grip, and that PL Coyote, right? Grip. Yeah, I got a Coyote, and then I also got a Wolverine now too that I acquired. And nice. It's just that PL was just such a sweet bow, and like I could probably see myself having one again, buying another one. And but the problem was, is like trying to go back and forth between the two bows is just, I couldn't do it. Like I would shoot the Stalker, and then I try to pick up the Black Widow. And just the way the grip was, there was completely opposite feeling. But yep. Coming from like a hill style bow to that PL was just awesome. I couldn't miss with that thing. I love that bow. And it was cool too, because I ended up taking it on a backpacking trip, that little Black Widow. And being two piece, it folded up in the pack just nice, you know, no bolts or anything to worry about. And then too, like the people at Black Widow are just awesome. And, but, I know that stalker came and it's pretty neat.
I don't know if you have knurled knobs for your stalker, but
I ended up getting a set of antler tips or antler bolts for the one.
I was gonna say, you can order them through Bingham's Bow Projects, and it's like $13 to your door for a set of knurled just the hand ones, just the basic.
Oh, nice.
That's you buy the cheap, threaded rod, and you buy the knobs, and it's like $13 to your door. And I don't think I would ever have a three-piece without those.
Because trying to, like, zero tools. I ended up buying a set of Allen wrenches and then kept the wrench in my vinyl bivy. But I'm like, man, if I lost that, you'd be hosed. But right now I'm trying to figure out a quiver. I had a Selway, and I like Drew, and his quiver's awesome. The problem was is if you want to break your bow down, what do you do with your arrows? And
I
might go to like a Great Northern quiver, maybe.
Drew's an awesome guy, and I think Selways are awesome quivers, but I've shot Great Northerns my whole life, and I would strongly suggest them for sure. I definitely like the Limbolt system. But then the other good, they also have the, if you have the inserts in the side of your riser.
I don't know.
No, but personally, I like the limb bolt system the most, I think, just because it's super easy. And then their newer system, so I use their older system. It's just like washers that go underneath your limb bolts. And then when you tighten your limb bolts down, it kind of, it's like a two-piece washer that has a hole for the, it's, I think he calls it a wire, but basically the framing goes into it. And when you tighten your limb bolts, it secures the quiver. But the newer system is you have basically a small little, it's kind of the same thing, but instead of the quiver attaching with the limb bolt pressure, there is a second little thing you can loosen up and tighten by hand. So instead of having to take the bow down, you can just loosen that sucker up and you can take the quiver right off when you're not, or like when you're in the stand, you can take the quiver real.
Yeah, exactly. Quick. That's it. That's what I would need. Yeah, that's awesome. Because last year was the first year shooting with a quiver on my bow. And for the, in the mountains, it was super awesome. But I ended up taking it off deer hunting because I didn't really, for once, it's like the wind's blowing and you're in that tree. And it's like a parachute on the side of your bow.
Oh, it definitely.
And then it felt like the one nice thing was it quieted it down quite a bit. But it just, and then I just thought it'd be more bulk, more movement for the deer to catch.
Yep.
And so, but it'd be nice to be able to have it on the bow because there's times, you know, you're walking in and need to get those arrows quick. What I usually have been doing is I have a cat quiver that I just strap to the side of my pack. On my right side, so my pack's on, I can reach over and grab an arrow. But then there's times where you want to drop your pack and then go chase something, you know, or you're dependent on having that backpack close by, which isn't a good deal either. But
I know the
there's too many options and not enough money is a problem. But
I think I own 7 Great Northerns at the moment, 8.
Oh,
it's bad.
Nice.
It's
bad. Yeah.
The
you might have a problem.
Well, it's, I own 2 of their bows, and let's see, just sitting in this chair, I can see one, I think, well, just maybe one. I can see 2 hoods because I have a spare hood, so there's usually 1 or 2 of those floating around depending on how I have them arranged. But the other cool thing about that limb mount is you actually double-side tape the main attachment system. So like if you were to take your bow down, that washer unit would actually just stay right on the limb. If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, that's so awesome. So, that makes it easy.
So ideally it would never actually leave the bow or those things. Right. So you wouldn't have to worry about losing them. So
I see
it's a pretty slick system.
Right.
I've got
I thought Drew has a new system now, but
yeah, they have the Flex. They call it the Flex.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure how it works, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty similar to that Great Northern system.
Right. But anyways, brother, I got to cook some fajitas. So, well, but it was great chatting with you, though.
Yes, I'm happy we finally got it done. And
definitely.
You're more than welcome if you ever have a free time.
Just your invite's good, though, because I want to – it'd be great to have a couple other guys in camp, even if you're, I know like $1,000 is a huge proposition to drop, especially the last minute notice. I mean, you have like what Wednesday to put in for the elk tag, but I think go ahead.
I wouldn't see it happening this year, but I will definitely keep it in mind for next year. So,
oh yeah, do it. Do it.
So
buy your elk point though this year. I'm not sure what the elk points are worth. I for a non-resident it can't be too much, but buy a point and then for next year put in, because it'd be awesome to have a couple other trad guys there.
That would be a dream come true for sure.
It would be. We're gonna then too, just I think you'd have more opportunities because you'd be able to send scouts out in different directions to try and find those sneaky little buggers. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's crazy how hard it is to find an 800-pound animal. But
yep. One of the funniest stories in my hunting career, I was like 12, and I was sitting down the road from my dad in a stand and heard this huge crashing noise coming from above me, and it was a moose. But we, my dad and I had radios, and I remember radio, he came, bull elk, bull elk. And he just kind of comes back, what? Bull moose, bull moose.
Right.
That's totally awesome. Butchered it. But anyways, but, I will
say, hey, thanks for the opportunity, and yes. Definitely let's start planning for next year, because
that sounds great.
It'd be great to share camp with you, I think, and
yeah. And like I said, if you ever want to come back on to the podcast too, just shoot me a text, and if it takes 3 months again, it takes 3 months. But it sounds like we have a whole another hours at more than an hour, but. Multiple hours of conversation we could go on. So
when it's my night to cook, and the wife's already starting to do my prep cooking for me, she's got the onions and the peppers ready and the meat thawed out for me to start cutting up. Yeah, she's like, she's like, are you going to cook, or am I going to have to cook? So, but hey, I appreciate it for the appreciate it.
Great talking to you.
That was awesome. So, you too. Have a good one.
You as well, AJ.
Yep. Don't get the virus.
I'll do my best. You too.
Yeah. Bye, buddy. Bye.